This podcast is brought to you by MoonBeachIsland.com.
Welcome to The Old Mill, a continuing series focusing on the entertainment industry, particularly film and television. My name is Robert Cole. I'm a writer and critic.
And I'm R. Daniel Walker, a designer and a dad, and we're both film junkies who enjoy a good debate, but only when we're right.
When I'm right. Today on the show, we'll be discussing the 2013 Oscars, hosted by Seth MacFarlane, and also giving you a review of A Good Day to Die Hard. First up, the Oscars, which we both watched last evening.
Yes, this was actually the first Oscars I've watched all the way through in a minute.
Why do you avoid award shows? I've known this for years, and I'm always, the award shows to me, it's like, this is the entertainment industry's Super Bowl. You've been in film and theater so long, why do you avoid award shows?
It's not so much that I avoid them, it's normally that I'm working when they're on.
Yeah.
So I avoid them for good reason.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I actually texted you last night, and I just wanted to tell you, we were both talking about how good we thought the show was.
Yes.
And the reason why I wanted to reiterate that is because they're usually so bad. And in particularly the last two Oscars, there was that one hosted by James Franco and Anne Hathaway 2 years ago.
Yeah, I didn't see that one.
Which was a disaster piece. And then last year, Billy Crystal helped the octogenarians along. And so this year they were wanting to bring in someone who would appeal to young boys.
Yes, and I think they did a good job with that.
They did.
I mean, I am a fan of Seth MacFarlane.
I do, and I've read a lot of stuff. There's already been a lot of crap in the papers today, New York Times giving Seth MacFarlane a bad name. There are a lot of people who don't like him, and I think part of that is people don't, he has success, and people don't like that in Hollywood when someone else is more successful than they are.
Right, and they're also, they feel guilty about laughing at his jokes.
Yeah, which are
very good.
Which are good and purposefully, oh, how shall we say, dirty. And, that's the sort of humor he's good at.
Yeah.
So as a host all around, I mean, this guy can sing like an angel. He has perfect pitch.
I've heard him sing in, Family Guy and Ted and, some other things. But this guy has a wonderful voice.
What I like about him, he loves that 1950s style jazzy. Remember in Ted, the thing that the music was all like that 50s jazz symphonic score that I love. He's just a classy guy.
He is. He is a classy and funny guy.
And the dancing.
Oh, I love the dancing. Charlize Theron and Channing Tatum.
Yeah.
What a pair.
Yeah.
She towers over everyone.
Yeah. MacFarlane mentioned that when she came out with Dustin Hoffman and he's like 4'2".
Yes.
And she's,
he only had one place he could look.
Yeah. Look, it should be said, the Oscars this year were produced by two guys who are musical theater people. And you could tell that because it was a night devoted to songs, the great songs of the Oscars. And, later on in the evening, they had Catherine Zeta-Jones performing the number from the musical Chicago.
Yes.
Well, the executive producers of the Oscars were executive producers of Chicago.
Oh, that's why Chicago was so represented. I didn't realize that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, one of the guys, Craig Zaden, one of the producers, is a phenomenal talent. So,
And speaking of Catherine Zeta-Jones real quick, I thought she sang better last night than she did in the movie.
Yeah. I agree with that, and I've also heard her sing with the Tonys. She sang on the Tonys 1 year for a little night music, and I didn't like it, but I loved that last night.
I haven't watched the Tonys since the Lion King won.
Well, the Tonys are the worst award show, I think, on television.
Yes, but you didn't realize I said since the Lion King won.
That would be 97, 98?
99, I believe. 98, 99.
Jeez.
Yeah.
It's a long time to stay away. But it's worth staying away. It's better. What you do usually is you wake up in the morning and you say, okay, who won? Because watching the show is a lot like revisiting the Holocaust.
Oh, God.
It is. It's the truth. It's the truth. All right.
You're getting us on a bad foot before this even starts.
Oh, shut up.
They had some really good, I thought, songs and sketches that they put together to kind of have the flow move along.
They did.
It was some odd pairings at times.
Yeah.
But I think it quite worked. Though one of my favorites was one of the actual awards announcements. I forget which one it was, but it was Paul Rudd and Melissa McCarthy. I thought they were great together.
You liked that?
Yes, I did. I did.
I remember tweeting. I was like, what in the hell is going on? Because it was so awkward. It was...
Well, it was. But if you go back and look at it, the structure of it was improv. It's that improv structure of never say no.
Yeah.
Of always say yes, but... And they went on with it until they found a very good point, or I thought a very good point, to stop and then move on to the award.
Yeah. Paul Rudd's a very funny guy. And I love seeing him. Melissa McCarthy, I think, could be making a few better film choices.
Yes.
Identity Thief has not gotten very good reviews.
No, not good at all. I love Sandra Bullock, and I hope this new movie with her and Sandra Bullock turns out. But at the same time, you know how it is when you do too many projects too fast.
Yeah, she's an it girl in a way. It just doesn't need to be the it. You know, Chris Farley popping out Black Sheep and all that. Because I could see her going in that direction.
Yes.
In terms of physical comedy. One of my favorite things in the show, one of my favorite things in life is William Shatner. I mean, this guy, you're talking about someone who's had, very few people in TV have more than one character they're known for forever. He'll always be known as James T. Kirk, T.J. Hooker, and Denny Crane from Boston Legal.
Yes.
And last night, Captain Kirk came down and told Seth MacFarlane that he was in the future, so he knew that Seth MacFarlane was going to go down as the worst Oscar host in history. And MacFarlane asked why. And why? Do you remember?
It was because he offended women.
And how did he offend women?
By singing a song about boobs.
I mean, it was like a song based on Mr. Skin. Like all of the actresses sitting in the house, we got told what movie we could see their boobs in. Which is fabulous. It was hilarious.
And then we got informed that we could not see Jennifer Lawrence's boobs.
Yeah.
Or we haven't seen her boobs.
No. Let me say about that. I hate to reduce an actress to, a sexual level, but Jennifer Lawrence, there's a scene in Silver Linings Playbook where she is changing in another room and Bradley Cooper's looking, and it's just her back. It's just her naked back, and it's the sexiest scene that I saw in movies all year long. And it was kind of a nice moment.
Well, there you go.
I like titties.
Don't we all?
Yeah.
Yes, but the boob song. Who wrote that? Did Seth MacFarlane write that?
It wouldn't surprise me, because Seth MacFarlane was also nominated for writing the lyrics to his own song from Ted.
Oh, yeah.
So he could have very well been in on the writing. Whoever the writing staff was did a really terrific job this year.
You know, I wonder if Seth MacFarlane did a lot like Billy Crystal used to do back in the day, saying that I'm going to write my own jokes.
Yeah, probably so.
But then again, they could have been afraid, like Ricky Gervais that year.
It wasn't quite as tasteless. I think the most tasteless joke, which was still funny, was the joke about the only actor to ever get into Abraham Lincoln's head was John Wilkes Booth. I mean, the whole audience was like,
it's been 150 years and still too soon.
and that was really the most tasteless thing. And that's not so bad. Ricky Gervais pummeled people at the Golden Globes for 2 years. The third year he wasn't as good. And I like that, but at the same time, not everybody is as cranky as Ricky Gervais.
Right.
Seth MacFarlane still wants to have a career. Ricky Gervais couldn't give a shit.
But an hour and a half of it is fine. 2 hours of it, 3 hours of pummeling somebody can get a little wrong. And I think Seth MacFarlane did a good job in not doing that.
Still a long evening, I have to say. I mean, it went about an hour past when it was supposed to go off.
And, and unlike the Super Bowl, commercials for the Oscars are not important. Why even have them?
What do you mean?
You don't pay attention to the commercials during the Oscars.
Oh, you're talking about the commercials in between?
Yeah. They take too long and they don't mean anything. But you have to pay for all that glitz.
Did you notice they were actually connected to film? All the commercials were about breaking into the entertainment business?
Yeah. Did you see the one with Tim Burton, Samsung?
Yes. Yes. I think that's, we could safely say that's the best thing Tim Burton has done
in a decade.
At least. All right, let's get to the winners of the 85th Academy Awards. Let's talk about Best Picture first. Not really a surprise to me.
Oh, yeah.
That Argo won. Here are the nominees first. We had Amour, which is the French film, the French language film by Michael Haneke. Argo, Beasts of the Southern Wild, Django Unchained, Les Misérables, Life of Pi, Lincoln, Silver Linings Playbook, Zero Dark Thirty. And Argo was the winner.
And unfortunately, I had not seen all of them. I saw the majority of them. Zero Dark Thirty, Silver Linings Playbook, Life of Pi, and Armor, I had not seen yet.
The only one I hadn't seen was Life of Pi, and after seeing the clips last night, I intensely regret that.
Yes, I do.
Because it looks like a gorgeous film. Since I've been writing for Moon Beach Island, I have got to see a lot of the films. And let's just start out by saying 2012.
Great year.
Great year for film.
It's been a long time since we've had a year this good.
Oh, I mean, you know, in other years you think, why was that person even nominated for doing something? And this year there was real competition.
There was real competition. I mean, just in these films, just in the 9 films, in a normal year, Lincoln would have taken everything.
Yeah.
If it weren't Lincoln, it would have been Silver Linings Playbook. If it weren't that, it would have been Argo. But you have 3 films so strong.
Yeah. I mean, they really stepped up their game, and it is unusual. Let me ask you a question. Ever since the Oscars have gone to having 9 or 10 pictures, do you think that's a good move? It should be said, early on in the Academy Awards, that's how it was. The year that Gone with the Wind won, there were like 9 other films nominated. It decreased down to 5, and now it's back up to 9 or 10. Do you think that's been better, worse?
You know, I'm not too sure about that. I could see why they did it to open up, you know, with the boost of the indie film scene and small budget films. At this point now, it's hard to tell an indie film from a studio film these days.
I'm just going to go ahead and say it. I think the indie film is basically over. Do you remember when, you know, in the 90s, every year we discovered a new Tarantino, another Kevin Smith, Todd Solondz, all these guys. And they were all making these independent films. Then in the 2000s, kind of after Monsters Ball, all of the independent films were kind of looking the same. They had big stars like Halle Berry. They had the Weinsteins were mostly putting them out. And now those people have really gracefully stepped into the world of commercial filmmaking.
Yeah. Well, it was either that or it was a big studio film trying to be an indie film.
To be different. Well, the only really independent film, I think, we could do Beast of the Southern Wild, which both saw.
Yes, and I liked.
I liked it. I don't think it was...
I don't think it was nomination worthy.
No. No. And I wouldn't for a minute tell those people who made it that they should stop. They're gifted people.
Not at all. I think they have some stories they could tell, and they could tell them pretty well.
Yeah. Yeah, but... All right, so Argo, were you happy with that as the winner?
Yes. Yes, I was. For a couple of reasons. I've always been a secret fan of Affleck, except for Geely. I apologize.
I like Geely. I'm going to go ahead and say it. I like craptastic things just as much as I do actual good films.
Right.
But go ahead.
But also because a good friend of mine was in the Victor McKay. He's very proud of it, and I was very happy to see him in it. And he was good, and so was everyone else in it. It was just a all-around solid... Everything was just wonderful about it.
You saw it on DVD, right?
Yes.
Let me... I just want to... I saw it in the theaters with a nearly full audience. And it was the first time, really, in my life where, you know, we were waiting in line in the bathroom and talking about it. Because the whole movie, we had been kept on the edge of our seats. It was an intense film, well-edited, well-written, like you said. And let's just go ahead and say it. How can a film win Best Picture at the Oscars and not even have its director nominated? I mean, it's just a shame to me because Affleck has had to fight, you know, to get respect ever since he won an Oscar way too young.
Right.
He's been having to fight to get back up there.
Yeah. I wonder if it's so that they can give 2 important awards.
Maybe.
You know what I mean?
Maybe.
I wonder if it's they're saying, well, you know, we really want to give this guy a Best Picture award, but this movie was really good too, so let's give him the Best Director to make up for it.
I don't know. But it's kind of surprising. You know, I had a teacher who was actually in the Academy. And the Academy, you know, they're mostly old white men. Well, that's why they typically go for the King's Speech and prestige pictures like that. Right. You know what I mean? So it used to be, if you were an actor like Ben Affleck and you made a movie, you made your directorial debut, most of the people in the Academy are actors. And so when an actor is nominated for Best Director, you want to give it to him, because when those actors become directors, they want their films to win too. And so you see it, Warren Beatty, Robert Redford, all those guys, when they made a movie...
George Clooney.
They all won. George Clooney, I don't think, won Best Director, I don't think, for Good Night and Good Luck. But
right, he's been nominated for...
And Affleck just, for some reason, he wasn't even nominated, and I can't get over it, but... He's still, I think it's safe to say, he's got a long career ahead of him.
Right.
So, what about some of the other films? What did you think? Let's talk about Les Miserables for a minute.
Oh, gosh. Well, coming from a theatrical background, I have always loved Les Mis as a stage production. I've even worked on it for a couple of weeks during a national tour when it came through town. It's one of my favorite musicals. So I had a lot of expectation for this film because I love the musical so much. And for me, it surpassed my expectations.
Yeah.
There were some weaknesses in it, but I think the strengths of it more than made up. And even the weaknesses were acceptable.
I don't know about you. When I go to the movies... Even though I like movies that are intelligent, I don't really go to have my brain teased. I don't really go to have an intellectual experience. What I want is an emotional experience. I want something that is going to connect with me on a deeply human level. Les Miserables does that.
Yes.
And perhaps for that reason, I think the Academy might have shied away. I don't think it was going to win Best Picture. Just because of how odd it is in terms, you know, having the music recorded, the singing, recorded live, but it did win for sound, which was interesting.
Yes.
It won for...
Was it sound editing?
Actually, sound mixing. And I was surprised, because that was really forward-thinking of the Academy, because a lot of people had trouble with that part of the film. I loved it. I thought it brought emotional depth that, you know, regular lip-syncing wouldn't do.
Well, it was able to bring out more performance emotion.
Yeah.
You know, because they're not recording their song and then 2 months later shooting their scene.
Exactly.
What you see happening on film is what you hear happening on film at that moment.
And it's happening in the present.
And I think if more soon-to-be musicals do that, let's say Wicked, whenever it's made, if they do the same thing with that, then I think we're going to get a much better product out of it than the likes of what we saw with, you know, Chicago and Mamma Mia and all the other movie musicals that were good. They just didn't have the power.
And it should be said, I mean, back in the 70s and 80s, the idea of a film musical being popular was dead on arrival. I mean, you know, that was around the time when they were doing Hello, Dolly with Barbara Streisand, and no one in the country went. And now musicals are back in favor, and I think that's a good thing.
Yes.
Let's keep Lincoln to later on in the discussion. We're going to talk about Spielberg later.
Yes.
So let's not talk about Lincoln at the moment. I saw Zero Dark Thirty. I am glad it didn't rush in at the last minute like The Hurt Locker did and you know, take away a prize from a better movie. But it was a great movie. Catherine Bigelow, I would venture to say, is probably the most important female director we have. And this, you're talking about an industry where there are very few female directors.
Right.
And I think she's the first to win an Academy Award, maybe only the second to be nominated or something like that. Maybe Jane Campion for The Piano. But it was a great movie, very gripping. The best picture, but a good picture.
Well, I love her work, and I cannot wait to be able to see Zero Dark Thirty. I was a big fan of Hurt Locker, and also one of her older ones, just totally... skipped on the name, but the Russian Submarine with Harrison Ford.
K-19 the Widowmaker.
K-19 the Widowmaker is one of my favorites.
What I like about her, too, is she's not making the kind of films that people who are looking for stereotypes would assume a woman would make. Actually, her career at the beginning was about making the kind of movies that young, dumb, and full of cum male directors usually make, like her former husband, James Cameron. She made action films. She made adventure, powerful action films. High octane. Silver Linings Playbook was also in the run, and I thought was... I liked David O. Russell a lot. I liked David O. Russell more when he was a little more adventurous. Silver Linings Playbook, I think, is his most tame movie. It's almost a conventional romantic comedy, except that the characters are not conventional. They're all on Prozac and right. have dealt with great loss.
Well, I kick myself for not having seen this yet.
I mean,
due to the fact of it, I love everybody in it.
Hold on, you love Chris Tucker?
Oh, Chris Tucker's in it?
He's actually good. He's actually good in it, but I just wanted to make sure you were saying the right thing there.
Right. Okay, well, I may not love Chris Tucker, but I did love Rush Hour.
Yeah.
And, you know, there you go.
Last one on I want to I did see a more also, I was just going to say, it did win Best Foreign Film. I love Michael Haneke. I particularly love The Piano Teacher with Isabelle Huppert, but we're talking about a film that, I mean, the subject, of course, is about a woman who has a stroke, and her husband, which is apparently the most polite man in all of France, who just deals with it. The movie just, for me, I'm used to seeing foreign films, I'm used to seeing different films, but this one bored me to tears, and I think most Americans probably would also be bored to tears. You'll go a full, you know, 3 minutes without a word spoken. I mean, it's just... And it's not like 2001 where that's a blessing. It's actually plodding along. And last but not least, Django Unchained.
Oh, my God. Quentin Tarantino is a film god.
This is another thing. And in a year with this many good movies, you know, the two movies that I wished had more attention were Django Unchained and Moonrise Kingdom.
Yeah, yeah. What happened with Moonrise Kingdom? Where was it?
It got a screenplay nom, and I think that's because this is what the Oscars do. This is what the Oscars do. They take a movie by a true filmmaker. Like Wes Anderson, Quentin Tarantino, Paul Thomas Anderson, they end up getting the Screenplay Award and not the Best Director Award. Why? They might be too young, they might be too different, but Django Unchained was a love letter made... It was a love letter to movies.
Oh, yeah.
All of Tarantino's movies are kind of like that.
You know, I think Tarantino is started to get himself into a really interesting niche of... a genre filmmaker.
Yeah.
Of picking a genre and making...
The ultimate genre
film. I mean, it's got the best of everything in it.
Well, you know who also did that? Was Stanley Kubrick. When he made a horror film, he set out to make the horror film. When he made 2001, he set out to make the science fiction film. And I think Tarantino's going to be talked about in the same breath as the greats, as Kurosawa, as Kubrick... Mm-hmm.
You know, I hope so, because he does not cease to impress me in anything he does.
Yeah.
Wow.
Hey, we agreed on some things. Folks, we're not going to say that's going to happen very often.
Not very often at all.
But we still have more things to talk about. Let's go to Best Director now. The nominees were, again, Haneke for Amour, the newcomer Ben Zeitlin for Beasts of the Southern Wild, Ang Lee for Life of Pi, Steven Spielberg for Lincoln, and David O. Russell for Silver Linings Playbook. I think no matter who would have won, it would have been a surprise.
Yes. Yes, I will agree with that.
I mean, you literally couldn't... I don't think you could have pegged that one. It, like you said, in a normal year, Lincoln might have won more. We're going to talk about Lincoln later. I don't think it was... Lincoln's a very intellectual film, not a very emotional film. It's all about one particular aspect of the presidency. It wasn't a traditional biopic in any sense of the word. And then we had, instead of Ben Affleck or Quentin Tarantino, we had this new guy, Ben Zeitlin, Beasts of the Southern Wild. Again, a film that I think had a lot of good things to discuss. A lot of, you know, I don't know if I was as emotionally invested in it as some people were. There were a lot of people in Hollywood loved this movie.
Right. And I think for me, what triggered the emotion in me is being a father. Mm-hmm. That triggered a lot of emotional aspect, even though I'm a father of a little boy rather than a little girl. That juxtaposition is...
You know, he might have been nominated for the simple fact that he disregarded the rule from W.C. Fields that he worked with children. You know, I mean, you're talking about someone who took a little 9-year-old girl and got a performance out of her that was Academy Award worthy, Kavanjane Wallace. He might have been nominated just for that,
right?
If
right.
nothing else,
just for his ability to cast.
Yeah. Well, we have one of the masters, in my opinion, Ang Lee, did win for Life of Pi, the film we're not qualified to talk about, but we could talk about Ang Lee.
Oh yeah, who is just a visionary director, except for the film we do not speak of, Hulk.
Right. You did just speak of it. I just want to point that out right after you said it. But yeah,
the film that must not be named.
Can we get on IMDb and switch the director of Hulk to M. Night Shyamalan?
All right.
So that he's not embarrassed by that for future generations. I mean, Ang Lee didn't have to make another movie. He didn't have to make another one after The Ice Storm. To me, that's one of the perfect movies of the 90s. But he's a guy who really the Academy loves, Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, mm-hmm. and his other films. And he's a great director.
He is. He's a very I love his visual storytelling.
Yeah.
He does big epic pictures that are framed beautifully. And it's also no surprise that his director of cinematography won best cinematography on it as well.
Yeah. So. Even though you do watch the cinematographer's speech, he couldn't talk. He probably should stick to just filming things.
Shooting film.
He didn't know what he was saying. All right, the acting categories, the reason why people actually tune into the Oscars and the number of a billion people. So let's talk about Best Supporting Actor first. Our nominees were Alan Arkin for Argo, Robert De Niro for Silver Linings Playbook, Philip Seymour Hoffman for The Master, Tommy Lee Jones for Lincoln, and Christoph Waltz for Django Unchained. Who did you want to win this category?
I wanted Tommy Lee Jones to win it.
Me too.
Wow.
I know you're going to be shocked.
I am shocked by that. I honestly figured you would say Alan Arkin or Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Alan Arkin showed up on set on time and, and performed his lines. And that's about all you needed to do that character for Argo.
Well, that's true.
You know, I hate to say that of a fellow graduate of Bennington College, but I mean, you didn't have to do anything. And Alan Arkin's getting to the point where, you know, he can barely wipe his own ass and he gets awards for doing things because he still can, you know, walk around. No, it's not really that bad. But, I mean, look at the other categories, okay? Christoph Waltz, who actually won, I think, unfortunately. We're talking about a guy who none of us had ever heard of before, Inglourious Basterds. Was he incredible in Inglourious Basterds? Absolutely. And they did give him the Oscar for that, so I don't know why they felt bad this year to give him another one.
Right.
Because, let's talk about him in Django Unchained. How did he really support the other cast members? Did he? And I mean, he talked a lot about Tarantino in his acceptance speech. And he thinks a lot of being a supporting cast member. But I felt he was the one part that he was the square peg trying to go in the round hole.
Well, I didn't see him in that way so much. I just didn't see his character as having a whole lot of depth.
No.
I mean, he was very focused on one thing, one goal.
Two-dimensional.
Two-dimensional. And then, I mean, yeah, he was a man who stuck to his promise, but, you know, once he fulfilled what he needed to get, but I don't see it as a really deep performance. I mean, it was good. I think Christoph Waltz is wonderful, and I hope it's not just Quentin Tarantino that pulls a performance out of him. I hope his next projects down the road with other directors do the same.
I think he will be. He seems to me like, I don't know his training, but he's as good as any classically trained actor. Tarantino, there are a few people in Tarantino films who genuinely are only good in Tarantino films. I can think of Uma Thurman. But you know, that was a really odd choice. If I was going to pick anyone from Django Unchained to be nominated, it would have been either DiCaprio or Samuel L. Jackson. Because I didn't know that was Samuel L. Jackson.
No,
I didn't. When I first saw him in that movie.
He should have been nominated for that. He had such a deep character to play.
It was definitely the one with the most depth to it.
I mean, you know, I'm a Leo fan.
Me too.
I like him. And he was particularly good in this movie, but I thought that Samuel L. Jackson gave the performance of probably one of the performances of his lifetime.
So far. That and Jungle Fever, I think, mm-hmm. are the two best. Philip Seymour Hoffman and Joaquin Phoenix had the same problem for me. They were incredible in their film. Their film wasn't any good.
Right.
And that's the end of the story. Joaquin Phoenix, I'll actually go ahead and say it. Joaquin Phoenix was as good to me as Daniel Day-Lewis was as Lincoln. but he was just in a project that was inferior.
Yeah, but we're talking about supporting actors.
I know. So let's, don't tell me what we're doing. I know what we're doing. but what I'm saying is, I think that connected to Philip Seymour Hoffman, too. Because Hoffman, again...
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Good.
Because their characters had such a connection, you kind of...
Well, but also they were well played. They were well played characters. But the film wasn't any good. And if the film's not any good, you're not going to, you know,
right.
Even though Kristen Wiig is really good in Bridesmaids, Bridesmaids is not going to win the Oscar because it's that kind of movie. And The Master was this perplexing jumble of ideas that, you know, usually Paul Thomas Anderson is so clear headed. And that was such an unclear.
There was a lot going on in that film.
Yeah. So we both said we wanted Tommy Lee Jones. Why did you want Tommy Lee Jones to win it?
I love it. When an actor doesn't play his action. So to watch Tommy Lee Jones in that movie all the way through and not really know why his character is fighting so hard for the 13th Amendment.
And to see it revealed
at the end.
We won't spoil it for anyone. But.
I thought that his ability to hide that, to see that moment, the revealing moment, and his whole performance flooded back into my head, and I was able to see those moments where he just wanted to say it.
Sometimes what you don't show is as important as what you do.
Right, which is one of the reasons why I love...
Men in Black 3.
Yes.
What?
No, Brokeback Mountain, Heath Ledger's performance in that. Ah. And a lot of people didn't like it. Because they said he hid too much. He was too stoic. But for me, I liked that. I like seeing a character being forced to hide that kind of thing. And
I think that's valid.
That's why I like Tommy Lee Jones. Not because Tommy Lee Jones is a character actor in any way. You always know it's him on that film. But because of the choices that he made, that's what got me.
Gotcha. All right, Best Supporting Actress. We had Amy Adams for The Master, Sally Field for Lincoln, Anne Hathaway for Les Miserables, Helen Hunt for The Sessions, and Jackie Weaver from Silver Linings Playbook. This was the surprise of the evening. No, I'm just kidding. It wasn't a surprise at all. I mean, I think everybody in the world knew.
Yes. Had Anne Hathaway not won this award, I would have been very upset.
I might never watch the Oscars ever again.
Well, see, I can't say that. Ah. So, I mean, because I don't always watch them.
Oh, that's a good point.
You know, so, I mean, I have no recourse.
I actually didn't watch the year she hosted with James Franco. So.
I could have just said I would have thrown something at my TV, but then that damages my TV, so.
I wrote a review of Les Miserables, and I said then that I felt in those... 3.5 minutes if I dreamed a dream, Anne Hathaway managed to bring herself up from a girl who started out in Disney movies like The Princess Diaries to someone who is on the level with the great screen actresses of all time. I mean, she was superb. And I didn't used to think much of her, and now I will watch everything she does with great attention.
I've seen everything she does, and there has yet to be anything that I didn't like or I haven't liked.
You know? She was definitely good in Brokeback Mountain. She was good in a lot of things, but she was great in Les Mis. And
yes.
I think that's the point. She was beyond. Otherwise, I don't think the category... I mean, I hate to say this. The category didn't mean very much outside of Anne Hathaway to me.
Right. Well, I mean, you know, I hadn't seen Zero Dark Thirty, so I don't know about Jessica Chastain's performance. But
That's actress.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. I looked at the wrong one. Yeah. Oh, there we go. Yeah, sorry. I mean, I thought Sally Field was good.
Too old.
But, and also, I don't think her character was well-rounded enough.
Yeah. And I don't...
You know? I didn't think she had enough to work with.
I don't mean that Sally Field is too old for, like, anybody. I mean, she's too old to play Mary Todd Lincoln. I agree with that, because we all know from history that Mary Todd Lincoln was crazy. And so there could have been, you know, more. Again, Lincoln resisted that sort of thing. It wasn't about that.
And I think Amy Adams has the potential somewhere to get one. I just don't think, as you said, it was a bad film.
It was
some great performances, but as far as the film as a whole, The Master just was confused.
Yeah.
It didn't know what it wanted to be.
I don't think there was a chance in hell that Helen Hunt and Jackie Weaver, for all intents and purposes, Helen Hunt was dead before The Sessions. She hasn't made a movie that has registered since maybe in a decade. I don't know.
Yeah.
And Jackie Weaver, I've never heard of. She was good.
What Women Want and As Good As It Gets, I think, were her.
That would have been 98 and 02. So yeah. It's a long time. So, in Hollywood terms.
Exactly.
Dead.
You know, you can't always do movies like Twister.
You know, I think that should be put on a bumper sticker somewhere. Now, I actually like Twister. I do. I do. And you know who was in Twister? Philip Seymour Hoffman, future Academy Award winner.
Right.
Okay. All right. Do you want to go on to actor and actress?
Yeah, we can move on to that.
All right. Best actor, Bradley Cooper, Silver Linings Playbook, Daniel Day-Lewis as Lincoln, Hugh Jackman, Les Miserables, Joaquin Phoenix as the Master, and Denzel Washington for Flight.
How do you pick? Now, I haven't seen Flight, so I didn't see Denzel Washington's performance.
Let's just say that you avoided something akin to the AIDS epidemic. Flight was the biggest piece of trash that was thrown out of the car this year.
Okay, and just for the record, I'm pretty sure when I do see it, I'm not going to see it the same way he does, so I can probably
guarantee. That's because I have taste, so, ooh, oh, ouch.
Oh. Anyway.
Again, yes. Joaquin Phoenix was physically, vocally, I mean, it's great for him to not be the stupid person doing that faux documentary where he's a rapper anymore. It's great he's back into acting, because he's a great actor, right. But
He might need to do a comedy to do a little bit of a reset in his thing, because he's one of these actors that I think as he gets older, if he keeps up this extremely deep method style dramatic acting stuff that he's been doing recently, he's going to not make good films anymore. I think he's going to fall off the face of the planet or go crazy, something.
I think that's a good segue into Daniel Day-Lewis, because he is, of course, the most talked about method actor in Hollywood.
That is true, but I think where them two differ is that Daniel Day-Lewis has more structure at home than I'm sure Joaquin Phoenix has. You know, Daniel Day-Lewis mentioned talking about his wife during his acceptance speech. You know, I could see where that is a attribute in what he does, to have somebody that keeps him grounded even when he's in a character.
I think, you know me, you still act occasionally, we both used to be actors. I think the method and everything about it is complete bullshit. And I think that Daniel Day-Lewis could have turned in a performance worthy of an Oscar without having to do all of that garbage. But since he does... you can't deny what a master of the craft he is.
Right. Well, you know, I'm not a fan of, in my performance style, personally, I'm not a fan of a full method acting where you stay in that character 24/7, even when you're at home. However, I do like and I myself perform this way, a mix of it where I'm constantly keeping the character in my head so he's fresh.
Mm-hmm.
And it does affect me in my personal life. And I can understand how having someone there to keep you grounded, even when you're in that state, is a positive. But I don't think Daniel Day-Lewis is a character actor like, let's say, Brando or...
No, Daniel Day-Lewis learns his lines.
Right, right.
That's a joke.
I mean, I'm talking about one that if you're playing a guy who's angry and upset all the time, that you piss off. One of my favorite actors, Christian Bale, he's probably the worst kind of
method actor. Yeah.
You know, that whole thing that he really becomes an ass.
Yeah.
Which
Day-Lewis is probably just always working on the voice, always working on. And according to historical record, he does Lincoln the way that we imagined Lincoln would have been, he did have a higher voice than people. I think that the only thing that he didn't do quite well as Lincoln is he wasn't half as ugly as Lincoln was.
Right, right, right. Yes. Well, you know, that's the Hollywood version of a biopic.
I suppose so.
I mean, that's Jamie Foxx's Ray.
Yeah.
You know?
Yep. Best actress, Jessica Chastain for Zero Dark Thirty, Jennifer Lawrence for Silver Linings Playbook. We also had the French actress Emmanuelle Riva in Amour, Kouvanjane Wallace from Beasts of the Southern Wild, and Naomi Watts in The Impossible. Should be said, I mean, everybody knows this by now, but this is the category with the oldest nominated actress and the youngest. Yes,
in the same year.
And neither one of them had a chance because Jennifer Lawrence cannot be stopped.
And speaking of a 9-year-old, that brings me back just real quick to Seth MacFarlane's joke about a 9-year-old could do it.
Yeah. Yeah, from now on, you know.
So, you won an Oscar. You got nominated. Ooh, 9-year-old can do that.
Every time they do that, every time they nominate someone who's, like, way too young to even decide to be in the business, I mean, those people generally turn out okay, like Anna Paquin, but sometimes they turn into Tatum O'Neill,
right,
and they're nuts.
Well, you know what? What my thought, and I'm gonna do this a lot, everybody. I'm gonna bring things back to me and my son, okay, and being a new father. My thought is, if this were my son and he lost, how is that going to affect him? I mean, you know, because children can sometimes get in their head that, you know, did she have in her head, oh, because I'm 9, they might give it to me? And then what if she lost and was disappointed? How to handle that emotional...
Yeah.
You know, NPR had something the other day about there used to be a category for young actors.
There was. Judy Garland won it.
Shirley Temple won. And why don't they do that again?
I don't know.
Because I think to put a 9-year-old in the same boat with Jennifer Lawrence in this, and Jessica Chastain, which I haven't seen her performance, but these, Naomi Watts, to put them in that category.
It's unfair.
It's really unfair.
Yeah.
I mean, I think she deserves something, but maybe not a Best Actress Award, maybe a Best Young Actress Award.
And also, I think the Academy Award suffers, you know, some have Best Ensemble Acting. I think Oscar should have that too. Because if you think about ensemble acting, Silver Linings Playbook would have won that because the cast worked together so well.
Right.
And I think that's a category at the SAG Awards, but not the Oscars, and it should be.
Well, you know, and I think that could have worked for The Master, too.
Maybe.
You know, it wasn't a great film, but as a group of people together in a film, I think that they gave some good performances and bounced off each other really well.
That's a good
anyway
point. Yeah, Jennifer Lawrence, 22 years old or something.
Wow,
like that.
Wow, Jennifer Lawrence, where did you come from, girl?
Yeah. You know, I had forgotten she was in Winter's Bone and made all that ruckus about, you know, that was right, a movie that was talked about a lot in Hollywood.
Yeah, I actually just bought the Blu-ray on that, and I'm interested in watching that again.
Yeah, I never saw it, but I don't watch movies with sexual titles.
But yeah, but and you know me, I loved.
you just caught that, didn't you?
Yeah, delayed reaction. You know, I love the Hunger Games.
Yes, but after we gave you your medicine for that,
but unfortunately. Well, not unfortunately. What I think I loved about Hunger Games is that the image of her is not who I had pictured for that character.
Right.
But suddenly she changed that, yeah, the image of that character. And I've read the trilogy. Yeah, she's great, and I cannot wait to see her in Silver Linings Playbook, which I have not seen yet.
I think she was the best thing in the Hunger Games, too. All right.
Now, I want to talk about Naomi Watts here real quick.
Okay.
I did not know about this movie, The Impossible.
Did you read about it?
No.
It's about that tsunami over in somewhere on the other side of the world. And they're like an English family, her and Ethan, or Ewan McGregor, and they're caught in, yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay, separated because, from the, yeah, because the clip that they showed...
That was her being helped by the...
Right. You know, it made me want to see it.
Yeah.
And I've always loved Naomi Watts.
It got very strong reviews. I think it might have suffered from the fact that it came out really late in awards season, and so it wasn't thought of in the same breath as Lincoln and things like that, because you have to really... You have to time those things just right. You have to open your movie around the end of November.
Right.
Christmas is a good time. But it just wasn't one of those movies that I think if more people knew about it, they would have seen it.
Right, right.
But it's just, it wasn't in the zeitgeist for whatever reason.
But anyway, I was going to say something about Jessica Chastain earlier, too. I hadn't seen Zero Dark Thirty, but from the clip that they showed, it seemed like anybody could have.
That was how I felt. I thought it was a serviceable job. It is a movie about real people. And, you know...
I mean, Claire Danes gives the same performance in Homeland, you know?
Yeah.
I mean...
It is nice to see Jessica Chastain have such a range to play her character in The Help, another movie I disliked, and then to see her in Zero Dark Thirty. That's a pretty good transformation from being, you know, a ditzy Southern belle to a really chiseled, you know, CIA, you know, person, but... Yeah, I don't think it was. It wasn't her year. It wasn't her year for this category.
Yeah.
All right. Are there any other nominations you want to talk about? A screenplay or something like that? You had mentioned what you thought of the screenwriter for Argo. And
I loved his, I like to see people in a midst of great emotion.
Yeah.
And award shows do that sometimes, yeah. Especially some that are as competitive as this particular Oscars was. When a winner gets up there, it wasn't an obvious thing as to who was going to win.
No.
So to have a guy like this, who this is his first Oscar, when he mentioned to Ben Affleck, he said, 15 years ago, you were standing up here collecting your first Oscar for best screenplay, and you have helped me achieve that same goal, I thought was just touching. a very touching and powerful moment. And I felt I was happy for that guy.
I think it's hilarious. When those two won, we all thought that, well, Matt Damon's going to be the one we're really going to be talking about. And I think they both kept up their end of the bargain.
Yeah.
Should be said, these speeches, they had 30 seconds? It's very hard to get anything of substance in there. There are two speeches, I thought, that really did it. This year, the screenwriter for Argo, and the year that the composer won for Up, he was talking about the importance of the arts and families really encouraging their kids to keep on it. Those were great speeches.
The guy who won for, what was it, Best Short Film?
He was good. Yeah, he was good.
He had a good speech.
Yeah. Was that just Best Short Film live action?
For Curfew. And to see the girl, the star of that film, up on stage crying when he said she was homeless last year.
Now, that was the documentary. That was Innocente.
Okay, that's the one I was
talking
about.
Both speeches were good. Oh, okay. Both speeches were good. All right, let's end this up by talking about Best Animated Feature Film.
They still make those.
Apparently. But there has not been one I've wanted to see since before Cars.
Right. Well, I saw Brave because...
Which won in an upset. I thought it was going to be Wreck-It Ralph. Because Wreck-It Ralph got better reviews than Brave did.
Oh. Well, I haven't seen either of them. But I saw Brave and I liked it. And the only reason why I saw it is because I have a 2-year-old.
I used to look forward every year to the new Disney movie and the new Pixar movie. The last Disney movie I was interested in, Tangled, beautiful movie.
Mm-hmm.
The last Pixar I was interested in, I can't even remember. I mean, you know, they used to make movies both for little kids and for adults, and they'd enjoy it, like Finding Nemo.
Right. Finding Nemo and Monsters, Inc. Those were the days.
Have you seen anything like that from them in a while?
I haven't.
All right. Well, folks, that was the Oscars. We will be back in just a second.
Okay, we are moving on to our review of A Good Day to Die Hard, directed by John Moore, starring Bruce Willis, Jay Courtney, Sebastian...
I would imagine Coke. Coke. Yeah, it's K-O-C-H.
So, Sebastian Coke. Okay, I am a longtime fan of the Die Hard series. Bruce Willis, in my opinion, can do no wrong. And the ones that he has done wrong in, I ignore.
Yeah,
but look how long ago Hudson Hawk was. Yeah. I mean, in the last decade, how many bad movies has he made?
He's really made a comeback, and let's not forget again. He was in Moonrise Kingdom.
Mm-hmm.
He did a dramatic thing. Red was awesome.
Yes,
you're right. He has done.
I mean, even the small stuff like Hostage. Has been really wonderful, but. Die Hard. Once you have the first Die Hard movie to set up these characters, you don't need any of that stuff anymore. All you need him to do is find a bad guy, get in trouble, things blow up, people die, and he survives, and he gets to say, yippee-ki-yay.
Well, in this movie, he got to say motherfucker.
He got to say it in this movie. That's
the PG-13 rated one they didn't get.
Live Free or Die Hard, that really disappointed me, as I'm sure it disappointed a lot of you who are big Die Hard fans, which is probably why they allowed the R rating this time, because they got so much flack from that. But I loved it. I love the fact that in the last two movies, they've brought his children into it. I loved it.
What's the weakest Die Hard film in your opinion? So far?
Oh, number two. Remind me. Die Harder.
Was that like the one with the
That was the one at the airport. Oh, yes. Wow. Mm-hmm. Yes. And that was because they had a different director. If you look at it, the original Die Hard and Die Hard with a Vengeance have both had John McTiernan as the director.
Yeah.
So, you know, it was like they had John McTiernan did an awesome job. Second guy failed. Okay, let's give it back to John McTiernan. Right. And then he made Die Hard with a Vengeance, which you put Samuel L. Jackson in a movie with anybody that's halfway decent, you know, it buddy comedies are.
Yeah.
You know, it's him with, you know, Samuel L. Jackson with Bruce Willis or Samuel L. Jackson with John Travolta. You know, either way,
yeah,
put him with somebody, you're going to have a great performance.
Well, let me explain why you're wrong about this movie.
I am not wrong about this movie.
You know, I was really surprised. There are a lot of people who didn't like the last one, Live Free or Die Hard. I thought it was terrific. I mean, even if it was PG-13, I thought it was a fun movie, and sometimes I do just like to go to movies and have fun, despite how many movies I dislike. A Good Day to Die Hard was this. It was about five different exploding set pieces edited together with almost no story of any consequence at all. So nothing, and what I mean by that is there's nothing for Bruce Willis to play. And this is an amazing scene early on in the film, okay? He's gone to Russia, I assume, to see whether his son is going to be put in prison, right?
Yes.
And he doesn't know that his son is working for the CIA.
Right.
All right, so he goes over there, and there's this huge explosion in the courtroom. Somehow his son gets out, and Bruce Willis follows him around Moscow, trying to get him to say, hey, hold on a minute, I need to talk to you, I'm your father. And things keep on exploding, and Bruce Willis doesn't notice that lots of things are exploding.
No, he doesn't
respond to it at all.
That's because he's part of the explosions. He's part of the things that's making them explode. He's
following in the back.
He is John McClane. This is a normal day for John McClane.
I'm sorry, but if you've got in the first film, in the third film, in the fourth film, you had a film that was, it was worth your time. And this film was simply an exercise in how many different kind of explosions we can make.
What more do you need from a Die Hard film? It's called Die Hard. Not die with some story and have an emotional connection.
Okay, well, there were lines in the first Die Hard I remember. There's an actual story I can recall.
Well, yes.
And I can't recall or even begin to synopsize.
But you have to because it's based off of a book. It's not based on a book. Yes, it is.
What are you talking about?
The original Die Hard is based off of a book.
Really?
Yes.
People read.
Yes, that people read is based off of a book.
You're so full of shit.
No, look it up.
I'll look it up.
So,
keep talking.
I will. So anyway, you have already set up this character. You've set up his family. And you've set up the fact that he is no stranger to the world blowing up around him at the most inopportune times. And so this is just another inopportune time. He just happens to be in Russia.
An inopportune time? Fine. But the main point of what I'm saying is that he barely even notices that those things happen. It's not like he doesn't even recover from them before trying to get his son to get out of the truck and talk to him. When it's obvious his son is running away from being killed, he doesn't even notice it. Let's see, it was based on Nothing Lasts Forever by Roderick... that's a book. Roderick Thorpe. We all remember Roderick Thorpe. No one fucking remembers Roderick Thorpe.
But all I'm saying is that the first movie was based off a book. It had all that stuff in it.
Well, I still expect a movie not based on a book to have an actual plot. Sorry.
Oh, right, but it's Die Hard. You don't need a plot.
That's bullshit.
No, you don't.
Shit.
And you don't need a strong plot. Let's put it that way.
But you need something to do. I mean, there's something... And you know what the weird thing is?
Well, the bad guy had the thing to do. He was going to get the stuff.
Oh, okay. The bad guy went to get the stuff. Yeah, they should have put that. That should have been the tagline. Bad guy, go get stuff.
A good day. I can't even talk.
Honestly,
a good day to Die Hard, where the bad guy goes to get the stuff,
and Bruce Willis just sort of wants his son to talk to him. I liked his daughter a lot more in the last film.
But yeah, I'm going to ignore that comment. But you have to...
Well, yes.
you have to appreciate the continuation of this man who nobody can kill, no matter how, no matter if a helicopter is blowing up 10 feet from him, he's going to flick the driver off and survive. That's what happens. And that's all we need to happen. A guy got chopped up by a propeller blade. I mean, how awesome is that?
I didn't say it wasn't awesome. I would just prefer, I would just prefer the occasional character who actually made an impression on me. And outside of John McClane, there really isn't anybody. I mean, remember how great the villains in the first and third one
were? How many times does John McClane have to make an impression on you before you just accept the fact that he's going to survive everything?
See, but
I mean, he could survive cancer.
Maybe that should be the next one. Actually, with Bruce Willis's age, he could do, like, Depends. He could survive shitting on himself. No, don't sue me, Bruce Willis.
Live free, die hard in a wheelchair.
Or actually, just die.
Die hard on just, crutches. No,
just die.
Just die.
Just die. Folks, this movie is rated R for violence and language, and it's still out in theaters. And if you want to take on the advice from my friend, go and watch it. But if you don't, you could listen to me, and you probably wouldn't have a good time. We end each show with something we both enjoyed from the last week.
It could be a film, a show, a song, or a book. New or old, whatever.
Something we recommend. And we'll start the weekly watch with your pick.
All right. Well, I have recently been watching the West Wing series on DVD, and I am one episode away from finishing the entire series. So in the last week, I've watched season 7. And I have to say, this show as a whole is incredible, but the way they were able to wrap up this series in this season and take their time with it and not screw it up like a lot of shows do when they're going to be canceled or go off the air, I think is phenomenal. And if you haven't seen The West Wing, go out and watch it. It's got some great performances and an amazing script, and it, oddly enough, could be put in today's context in our current political environment.
When did it end? It wasn't that long.
It ended in 2006.
Okay.
It started in fall of 99, I believe, and ended in 2006.
A lot of its success dedicated to Aaron Sorkin.
Yes, Aaron Sorkin, who is just an amazing writer.
You're also a fan of his latest work.
Yes, The Newsroom. I don't know if they've started season 2 yet or not. I think they took an extended break.
Was it the summer last year?
Yes, it was. So I'm looking forward to season 2 whenever that comes about. But Aaron Sorkin is quite an incredible writer.
All right, this is my weekly watch pick. From the last hour or so, you've heard me, I hope, speak something intelligible. And I'm going to really disappoint you right here. Because again, my taste, I can watch, you know, something like 2001 A Space Odyssey, which is my favorite film, and then I can watch something truly terrible and enjoy myself.
Oh, God.
And I'm going to go with the gayest thing I possibly could for this first segment, despite not being gay. You know what I've been watching? It's a show on Animal Planet. Don't laugh at me. This is a show called Too Cute, all right? And what it is, It takes three families of dogs or cats, okay, and you see them from a few weeks old to a few months old in the litter before they get, you know, picked up by their new owner. And all they can do, they can't, like, see or hear or anything, so they're just, like, shuffling along on hardwood floor and falling down. And it's just the cutest damn thing I've ever seen in my entire life. I know. I know you weren't expecting that.
No, I was not expecting that at all. I was expecting some obscure documentary years.
I've watched obscure documentaries, but at the same time,
Too Cute is your surprise weekly pick.
I have enjoyed and they do little storylines. There was this one episode this week. This one thing I'll stop. There was an episode this week where there were these dogs. Right? A litter of like 8 puppies. And the family also had a pygmy goat. Have you ever seen a pygmy goat? It's the cutest damn thing that God ever invented, okay? It's about 2 feet tall. And when it's excited, it jumps and spins in the air. And when it greets things, it headbutts them. And the puppies really didn't like it. And it was cute as all hell.
And on that note.
All right, folks. From Moon Beach Island, this is Robert Cole.
And this is our Daniel Walker.
Go, you Huskies.
Go, you Huskies.
How do I do a film called The Old Mill when I don't have an old mill?
Well, first you have to change the title.